From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 27th day of January 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley. He's at ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Matt Blaisdell of the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, the president's proposed spending freeze would impact about 19% of USDA's annual budget. Colin Peterson expects USDA's proposed crop insurance subsidies cut is too deep, and that the program has other problems which need to be addressed, and the food inflation forecast has been trimmed. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories. And then I'll tell you a little something about electric fences. And as we close out this Wednesday edition, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated of Kansas City right here on Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report. It is a production, of course, of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids. Lernard Seed Service provides information and services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's the way the numbers settled up in Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon. Futures like this in the wheat pit. May contract 483 and three quarters settlement price, down 10 and a quarter. May at 497 and three quarters, a dime lower. And July at 509 and a half, down at 10 and a quarter. March corn at 358 and a quarter, down 4 cents. May at 369 and a quarter, down 4. And July futures there at 378 and a half, down 4 and a quarter. September 385 and a quarter, down 4 and a quarter. December futures 391 and three quarters, down 3 and three quarters. Soy complex, March beans 929, 18 and a half lower. The May at 938 and a half, down 18 and a half. And July 945 and a half, 18 and a half lower. August 939, down 18 cents. September futures in the bean pit at 924 and three quarters, down 14 and three quarters. March bean meal at 281.30, 610 lower. The March bean oil at 36.32, down 45 on the afternoon. February live cattle futures, 85.37 and a half, down 15 cents for the day. The March there at 98.52 and a half, and the feeder cattle down 45 cents. February lean hog futures at $66.57 and a half cents, finished a dime higher, and the April futures at $68.95. 27 and a half cents higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois on a Wednesday afternoon. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. March crude oil futures at 73.76, down 95 cents on the day. Ethanol at $1.78 and a half, down a penny and 3 tenths. Natural gas at 5.27 and 4 tenths, 21 and a tenth lower, and the RBOB at $1.93 and 6 cents, down 3 cents for the day. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.91 and 7 cents, down 3 and 3 tenths, and the gold futures at $1,084.40, down $13.50. The Dow now stands at 10,191. That's just about 2.7 points lower, and the U.S. dollar at 78.67 is up 0.23 for the day. The CRB index at 268.76. is down 5.12 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. A winter storm watch has been issued for extreme southern Illinois for Thursday evening through Friday afternoon. Tonight in northern and central Illinois should be cloudy, some snow showers, a few flurries early, and then some partial clearing in northern, central, and southeastern Indiana. Cloudy, scattered snow showers and flurries in southern Illinois and southwestern Indiana. Cloudy with rain showers. They'll change to freezing drizzle. Lows will range this evening from 2 in far northwestern Illinois to 30 in the far south. Tomorrow in the northern parts of Indiana, cloudy, scattered snow showers. In east central and southeastern Indiana, cloudy, some scattered snow showers, some flurries early. Then that'll become mostly sunny tomorrow. Elsewhere, partly to mostly sunny. Highs will range from 10 in far northern Illinois to 34 in the far south. The extended forecast says light snow showers and flurries will move across northern and central sections this afternoon and tonight, with less than an inch expected. Rain and overnight freezing drizzle is expected further in the south. Snow likely further in the southern areas Thursday night and into Friday. More on the weather when we get to the bottom of the hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Tom Testel and Morris at 815-941-2184. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's a Wednesday afternoon. On the line with us today is Paul Cooley of Adium Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, to take up the agricultural futures markets. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It looked to me, as things went through the day, as if at least early on it was fairly light volume. Can you tell me much about the trading day and what that meant for the red that we saw at the end of the afternoon?
Well, you know, definitely it seemed like it was a light volume day, but we did see bursts of selling in the marketplace. And, you know, we all hoped that that would be over with by now. But definitely did see and get the feeling that this patient is very, very sick. And the market is not through going down, and the marketplace was nervous about the grilling that Geithner got in the House committee today on the AIG hearing, and the market's also nervous about the State of the Union, and it's also nervous about the reports of receiving three big shots of rain in Argentina and a good chance of rain in Brazil for a big bin buster crop. And the market is extremely nervous when it gets all this information and has to digest it. And unfortunately, you know, demand just isn't catching on and saving the day.
It has not responded well to the federal government's moves over the past couple of weeks. It doesn't seem that the market is particularly happy with the Obama administration at this point. But the market is the market, I suppose, and sometimes the outside influences it, and sometimes it does not. Fundamentally, has anything really changed?
Since when?
Well, since USDA released its numbers.
Yeah. Yeah, a couple things. The crop, three things here, I think, that has changed. You know, the announcement by the Obama administration and the Massachusetts election and about the regulation of banks and, you know, possibly bigger reserve requirements for those banks, and also the chances of bigger production estimates out of South America than what the USDA projected. And as a result of that, the commodity fund long liquidation is continuing. The reports indicate that conservatively the funds still have 40,000 contracts of soybeans and 177,000 contracts of corn. And as a result of that, these commodity funds look at P&Ls every day as well. And, you know, at least the non-trend following funds seem like they're getting a major whipping at the present time.
Well, what do you suppose the marketplace will look like in 3 months as we head into the spring planting season if we get normal growing conditions as we go into that season? And I'm thinking that mostly I want to know about the old crop as opposed to the new crop and what must happen with it or what might happen with it, how out of condition it is at this point, how much of it will be pushed into the marketplace because of that, and what that means.
Yeah. There is this Gordyville farm show, and we understand the crowds up there are tremendous, and we do have a booth there. And one of the questions that I know everybody is asking everybody is that are we – you know, based on today's prices, it's my opinion that we are going to see more soybean acres than we would have 30 days ago or 45 days ago because the prices of corn have dropped. But we do know that there has to be a lot of tillage done, and there's going to be a function in the marketplace in which we're going to take soybeans lower, enough lower to encourage a little extra corn acreage in some places. We all know that the acreage is tremendous. And I did see a magazine article that this year, for example, we're going to see 2.8 million, last year we saw 2.8 million acres of CRP acres released. 2010, we're going to see 4.5 million acres released. 2011, 4.4 million acres released. 2012, 6.5. And 2013, 3.3. So the bottom line there is that we do have, particularly with this new triple and six-stacked hybrid corn, we're going to see this yield explosion in corn and soybeans, and we better see some demand improve, or we're going to see some pretty tough times back on the farm. The good news is that maybe Brazil's economy is exploding. Sugar prices down there are exploding, and there is talk that maybe Brazil might buy some ethanol from the U.S. But at the present time, I think that we have too many acres, and we are going to see a struggling ag economy, and that's the unfortunate six-month outlook that I see at this time.
So today we had corn down in the December 3.75 and November beans. We're down, I have the wrong screen up, down 14 cents. So it looks like they're pushing that bean number down further, faster, not by much, but by a little bit at this point. And you're expecting that will continue to happen, that beans will close on corn?
That we will see some further price erosion. And the problem is that if the market doesn't to do something and get prices low enough, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if we don't see, instead of a half a million acres more soybeans, maybe a million, million and a half acres under the present price relationships.
Okay, what did we not talk about that you wanted to be sure we talked about today? Anything?
I think that it's going to be interesting to see the Congress tonight, the State of the Union, and we'll have, I think that's the main thing is that, the crowds at the farm show is tremendous, and, the market is taking a real beating, and unfortunately we have to live through it for a while.
Okay. We thank you much for being with us.
Have a nice day.
You too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
Now, if you'd like to hear what Paul Cooley had to say again, you can always do that off our website at willag.org. If you can't get to the website, can't hear us on the radio, how about dialing this number, 217-333-3434. We call it our mobile analyst portal. We update it with some numbers and a bit of analysis at 10:15 and 3:15 daily at 217-333-3434. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take us through the agricultural news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, President Barack Obama's plan to freeze spending on discretionary programs for at least 3 years would affect about 19% of USDA's overall annual spending, or about $25.6 billion in fiscal year 2010. All told, USDA's entire department budget in fiscal 2010 is $132.8 billion. USDA's discretionary spending authority for fiscal 2010 is about $6.2 billion less than in 2009. House Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says that USDA's proposed cut in crop insurance subsidies is too deep, but he also thinks there are problems with the program and changes should be made. USDA is proposing to cut $4 billion over 5 years from the crop insurance program. Peterson says such cuts would cause that money to disappear from the Farm Bill's baseline budget. Peterson suggested changes in the commission payments to agents. Under the current formula of paying crop insurance agents, commission is based on the premium to insure a crop. Peterson says that he believes that paying agents a specific fee for each policy written may be a better system of compensation. USDA has trimmed its food inflation forecast for 2010, projecting prices at grocery stores and restaurants will rise at roughly the same rate. USDA lowered the consumer price index for all food to gain 2.5% to 3.5% from its December forecast of 3 to 4%. USDA also cut its price inflation outlook for fish, oils, and fats at grocery stores. The head of Archer Daniels Midland Company is calling on the agribusiness sector to prioritize cutting supply chain waste as a means to reduce food shortages and meet rising global demand. Pat Wirtz, chairman and CEO, called for a rethink in investment patterns to direct more investment toward post-harvest infrastructure, an area that she called ripe for private-public partnerships. And EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson says the Environmental Protection Agency aims to finalize, in her words, as soon as possible, standards that govern the amount of renewable energy in the nation's fuel supply. The EPA has been working to determine what biofuels count as advanced. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Both programs you can hear anytime you'd like at our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. While you're there, please do sign up for our free weekend newsletter. Just hit subscribe over on the right-hand side of the page at willag.org. Now up next, a good livestock fence makes for a good neighbor. It's also not that easy to install and maintain. I'll have more on the how-tos of electric fencing.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Electric fences have been a mainstay of the livestock farmer for decades. They're used to keep animals in and predators out. When done correctly, the electric fence works really well. They're quick and simple to erect, move, and even maintain. Still, Dean Oswald of University of Illinois Extension says it's important to recognize the electric fence is not really a physical barrier.
Electric fencing is a psychological barrier for livestock, so we have to look at why some of these fences we have out in the country fail, what it takes to control livestock. We know that it takes a fairly high voltage, and how can we maintain a good voltage on a fence?
It's fear of the voltage running through the fence that keeps the animal in place, not the fence. It's physically not strong enough to hold an animal, says Oswald.
If we don't carry a high enough voltage, we're not going to control livestock. They're going to go right through those electric fences. Now, another thing connected with fences, we use them mainly for control of livestock, but they can also reduce predators in sheep and goats and the smaller ruminant animals just by going to a multiple wire high tensile fence with alternate hot and ground wires. So there are additional benefits. Plus, you mentioned a lot of times we use one wire for managed grazing program where we're splitting paddocks up into a smaller area for more efficient grazing. we really need a good electric fence system in order to control livestock with one or two wires.
The high tensile or electric fence has some distinct advantages over other types of livestock fencing. They're small, even portable to some extent, and can be put up quickly. The electric fence needs fewer posts. These can be placed 30 to 40 feet apart on flat land. Still, it's a psychological and not a true physical barrier, so some attention does need to be paid to that which keeps the animal contained. The electricity.
You need to have a very good grounding system, and this is where some of the folks fall short, is that you need at least 3 ground rods at the charger, spaced 10 foot apart, and then you need some type of lightning protection on that fence, a lightning choke that will divert lightning back to the ground rather than going back and destroying part of an expensive charger. So 4 ground rods are needed at a lightning choke and perhaps other lightning arresters out through your system.
It's also important not to put too much tension on the electric fence. Oswald says it needs to be able to expand and contract with varying temperatures. Those wanting to learn more about electric fencing and pasture management can attend next week's Increasing Profit by Improving Grazing seminar. It will be hosted by University of Illinois Extension in Woodhull, Illinois on Thursday the 4th. You can sign up today by calling the Extension Center in Galva, Illinois. Dean Oswald will be there along with Jim Morrison. He'll talk about renovating bluegrass pastures. There'll be some information there on controlling parasites and flies in pastures as well. It's open to all livestock producers. Again, registration is and should be done today. There is a $25 fee. Just call Galva's University of Illinois Extension office. The number is 309-853-1533. That's 309-853-1533 in Galva, Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Well, the folks at the Anderson's Delphi facility in Indiana are not available to talk to us about the cash grain segment this afternoon, so we'll go through some of the calendar of events that are coming up. Don't forget that you can visit with Dave Dickey and some of our analysts at our evening events, and if you'd like to have one of those, just give us a call or check out our website at willag.org. One way or the other, you can call us at 217-333. 9697 if you'd like that. The next event is at the 4-H Center in Shelbyville, Illinois. That's on February the 1st at 1 o'clock. And Jackie Vakes will be there from Stuart Peterson along with Chuck Shelby from Risk Management and Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing. It's hosted by the Shelby County Extension Center, so call them if you'd like to sign up. There is a lunch there. And a 1 o'clock meeting at the 4-H Center in Shelbyville, Illinois. You can see all of those events, we call them our Outlook panels, on our website under calendar at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. In just 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated will be here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Mark Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. Authorities have lifted the lockdown of a building on Northwestern University's Chicago campus. The school issued an alert earlier today for everyone in the Rubloff building to stay in their offices with their doors locked after reports of a possible gunman inside an 11th floor elevator. A notice on the university's website says police completed a more than 2-hour search of the building. It adds that they remain on the scene and are continuing to investigate. A Northwestern spokeswoman declined to provide other details, including whether there may have been any arrests. Illinois' Board of Higher Education has decided to propose a range of funding options to lawmakers for next year's budget. Chairwoman Carrie Heitman says that's the best way to proceed with an uncertain financial picture. Illinois' cash flow crisis has delayed state payments to schools and forced the University of Illinois to implement furlough days. Governor Pat Quinn has said state schools would get their money, but Heitman says she's taking nothing for granted. State schools benefited this year from federal stimulus dollars, meaning government in the next fiscal year will have to come up with about $100 million just to make up for that loss. Illinois State University is inspecting 16 buildings for problems after a column, part of a column on one campus structure collapsed and killed a man on Christmas Day. Spokesman Jay Grove says the school will inspect the exteriors, roofs, tuck pointing, and other aspects of buildings with facades. Those buildings include the Old Students Union and Milner Library, part of a 43-year-old sandstone column on the front of Hovey Hall fell December 25th while workers were pulling it down. 57-year-old Stephen White died when a piece of the column fell onto his excavator. One of Chicago's main arteries, Wacker Drive, is getting a $366 million facelift. The three-year project includes work on Wacker's upper and lower levels from Randolph to Congress Parkway. Governor Pat Quinn says the project is expected to create 4,000 construction jobs. It's part of Illinois' capital construction program, and Quinn says they have the money to begin work this spring. Construction is expected to last until 2012. The work will include increasing clearance on the street's lower segments and replacing entrance and exit ramps. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. On a Wednesday afternoon, time to check in on the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's been cold and nasty out west. Can you tell me about the weather there and possibly here in the Midwest, too, first, please?
Well, certainly it looks as though we are encountering another surge of cold air coming down from Canada. It has chilled down the northern plains already. In fact, some temperatures overnight tonight will get down into the range of minus 15 to minus 5 degrees Fahrenheit across the eastern Dakotas, Minnesota, and down into some of the western Corn Belt. As we go through the next few nights, some of that cold air will push all the way down into northern portions of Missouri, but it's probably not going to go much further than that as far as sub-zero temperatures are concerned. I think we'll see single-digit and teen readings across the Midwest. The main reason why it won't go any further south is a major winter storm that likely will brew across the southwest U.S. plains here tonight and tomorrow and will march east-northeastward, passing through the lowermost portions of the Midwest and the Delta and end up on the middle Atlantic coastal region as we go into the weekend. And so that will likely prevent any further southward movement in the bitter cold air. The temperatures in the northern part of the Midwest that are not involved with the precipitation will not be all that excessively cold, but we will definitely see some sub-zero temperature readings. The storm that I mentioned is pretty interesting. It's going to produce some rather substantial snow accumulations in the southwest U.S. plains, impacting some of the hard red wheat country, but more importantly impacting livestock across that region. We're going to see 8 to 12 inches of snow accumulation in the Texas panhandle with maybe some local amounts to 14 or 15 inches. And then the storm will track probably 6 to 12-inch accumulations across southern Missouri, southernmost sections of Illinois, and then kind of diminish a little bit as it goes through Kentucky and increase again perhaps in Virginia. Again, this storm system won't go much further north, and let's say the interior southern sections of Indiana and southern Illinois, but it will be a significant event for those areas to the south.
And speaking of the south, turn your attention to the South American crop. It's in the mid part of its growing season.
That's right, and we are seeing some dryness now. In parts of Argentina, the past 2 weeks have generated very little rain in the southwest part of that country. Now, this is outside of the main soybean production region, but it does involve some of the corn and sunseed as well as sorghum producing areas, and it impacts La Pampa and the southwestern Buenos Aires for the most part. These two provinces are seeing some increasing stress right now. Crops are going to start suffering because of it. We are going to start seeing some shower and thunderstorm activity this weekend, but I don't believe it's going to be all that great in some of these far southwesternmost areas. What's good about the rain that's coming up this weekend and that which will follow up into next week is that we'll bring enough moisture into the key soybean production areas in Argentina to ease whatever drying is occurring in those areas and help conserve that subsoil moisture so they can continue a good development process on into the middle part of February. And, of course, in Brazil, it's been raining a lot in some areas. I think, again, this has been getting a lot more press than what it really deserves. But the majority of that country is still poised to do very well with production this year. We have a little bit of dryness in the northeast, and that's going to hang on for another week or so.
Drew, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, and have a great afternoon.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media on a Wednesday. I'm Todd Gleason.